Good morning. Morning of mistakes, apparently. I wonder why we make mistakes. It could be something we're thinking about this morning. It could be to do with pressure and stress and not taking rest. We've got to think about this whole theme of resting this morning. It's called God's Wonderful Rest. That could be my feet, because I've twice been to the Grand Canyon in Arizona. If you've never been, go if you can. It's one of the most amazing sights I've ever seen. And it could have been me putting my feet up, though I never wear sandals like that, so it wasn't me. And the reading that Debbie, that long reading Debbie's just done for us, must be the shortest one on record, contains these words on verse 2. By the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing, and so on the seventh day he rested from all his work. God's wonderful rest. When we start thinking about Genesis, as we are in this series, the inevitable question about creation and evolution comes up. I'm not going to address it this morning, you'll be pleased to know. But I am going to recommend a book, seriously. A book by John C. Lennox. I have a copy in my hand. It belongs to my wife. So if you want to borrow it, you have to ask her. And it's one of the best books I've ever read on explaining the Hebrew, the understanding of what the days mean, what's different about the seventh day. It's a brilliant book. It's quite deep. I had to read some pages two or three times to get the hang of it. But most of you are more intelligent than me, so it'll be suitable for you to read if you'd like to buy it or borrow it. I recommend it thoroughly. Now, our focus this morning is that after 6 days of creation, God ceased, God stopped, God rested from his creative work. But he didn't rest because he was tired. Please don't get the impression God said, 6 days of creating this lot, including us lot, you know, I've had enough now, I need a break. Need a break for a few million years. It wasn't like that at all. Because the Bible tells us these things. Isaiah 40, verse 28. Do you not know? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He will not grow tired or weary. And again, in Psalms 121. He will not let your foot slip. He watches over you, will not slumber. Indeed, he watches over Israel, will neither slumber nor sleep. So God doesn't grow tired, doesn't grow weary, doesn't fall asleep, doesn't doze off. You know that moment you're just praying to him earlier, God was awake. He stays awake all the time. He's not tired, he's not weary, he's not weak, he's not impotent, he's not lonely, he's not missing, he's not absent, he's not around, he is around. He is here and he's with us. That was good, wasn't it? Got quite excited then for a minute. I promise to calm down in a minute. So God was modelling a principle that still applies for us today, but we'll come back to that later. I want to talk about Christians and the Sabbath. The fourth commandment reads something like this: remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth and the sea and all that's in them, but he rested on the seventh day. The Hebrew word Shabbat, which is the word for Sabbath, means to rest and cease from work. If you want it more colloquial, it means to quit, means to stop, means to just not do it anymore, to break from it. And the Jewish Sabbath, you may not know this, but the Jewish Sabbath is kept from sunset Friday to sunset Saturday. It's not Saturday, it starts Friday evening and goes through to Saturday evening. And it's still kept, as I understand it, by most Jews. But I wonder about what this means for us today and how the church reacts to this. Would you be surprised to know that Christians argue over the Sabbath? You surprised by that? That Christians argue over things like this? Well, there's a small group of people who want to take it back to Saturday. They're normally called Seventh-day Adventists. Now, the Baptist has a group within their churches called Seventh-day Baptists. And basically, they believe that from the early church moved the Sabbath day from the Saturday to the Sunday, because that's the day Jesus rose from the dead. They should have not done that. It should be brought back to the Saturday. So it's a small group, but they're quite vocal and active. And I lived next door for a number of years to a couple who attended Seventh-day Adventist Church. They went out on Saturday morning. We went out on Sunday morning. We didn't see each other for most of the weekend because I was doing my thing on Saturday and Sunday, and they were doing their thing on Saturday. So, but then there's those that keep Sunday special. Another section of the church felt that the Christian Sunday should retain much of the characteristics of the Old Testament Sabbath. And believers in these churches tend to mark the Sabbath or Sunday by strictly observance abstaining from all work, recreation and support. And sport. Get the words right in a minute. This is a quote from C.H. McIntosh, a Plymouth Brethren writer in the 19th century. The idea of anyone calling himself a Christian, making the Lord's Day a season of what is popularly called recreation, unnecessary travelling, personal convenience or profit in temporal things, is perfectly shocking. You hearing me? It's shocking. We are of the opinion, he writes, that such acting could not be too severely censored. We can safely assert that we never yet came in contact with a godly, intelligent, right-minded Christian person who did not love and reverence the Lord's Day. Nor could we have any sympathy with anyone who could deliberately desecrate that holy and happy day. I suspect that 99.9% of us in this building are guilty. You are guilty. You are to be severely censured. You are not godly, intelligent, right-minded Christian person because you don't keep the Sabbath like the way that he wants it to be kept. So, now this may seem extreme. It is extreme. But it influences our thinking today. My wife tells me when she was a child in her 8, 9, 10 years of age, had parents who were strict Christians, didn't allow the television, didn't allow any spending of money or doing anything that caused another person to work. I had a curry with my eldest son, who is in his 40s now, reminded him in his curry last Wednesday that when he was 6, we'd just arrived in 1973, we'd just arrived in Kingston to pastor a church in Kingston. It was a lovely Sunday afternoon. I wasn't used to having the River Thames near to me. So as a whole family, we were walking along the river in glorious sunshine. And Paul, who was 6 at the time, said, "Dad, can I have an ice cream?" Because we passed one of those terrible on the Sunday ice cream vendor sellers. And I said, "No, you can't." So he said, "Why?" I said, "Because it's Sunday." He said, "Why not?" I had no answer. A 6-year-old was challenging me. I was living in a sort of observance of something I didn't believe in, but I felt I should practice out of some sort of guilt or trip of something like that. And another issue that makes it difficult to work this out, how do you respond to this? Who's ever bought a Sunday paper? You've got one here, Peter. When I was younger, that was frowned upon, a Sunday paper. You would never turn up, you might buy one, but you wouldn't turn up in church with it. You'd keep it sort of secret. But Sunday papers are produced on Saturday. So how about buying a Monday paper? Because that's done on Sunday. It's not straightforward, is it, this? It's so complex, so difficult, so tricky. So there's a third view. First view, turn it back to Saturday, minority. A larger view, and still active amongst the conservative evangelicals and some traditionalists in the church, would be to make the Sabbath of a Sunday like a Sabbath holy day, completely doing no work and nothing. Or there's a third view, and that is the one of not under law. The majority of Christians believe that the Sabbath is part of the Old Testament law and is no longer binding on Christians. And this view, the Sabbath regulations were fulfilled in Christ and therefore have been abolished. We're no longer required to keep the Sabbath. It's a good thing to while we're no longer required to keep the Sabbath, it's a good thing to keep a special day where we rest and honour God. Can you see that distinction? J. John writes this: Sabbath rules are dead, but the Sabbath principles remain. So the concept of rest, resting a day a week, is a really good idea. But to make it a law, to make it religious, to make it a ritual, is not a good idea, in my opinion. We make a distinction between keeping the Sabbath and keeping a Sabbath. Right, what did Jesus and Paul have to say about this? A couple of photographs I took earlier. What do they have to say? Well, Jesus said this. Jesus said to them, the Pharisees, the religious leaders, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. Jesus was challenging the Pharisees who had made Sabbath rules more important than Sabbath rest. I like that quote. Jesus was challenging the Pharisees who'd make Sabbath rules more important than Sabbath rest. Jesus was saying the Sabbath was designed for the benefit of humanity, not as a set of legalistic rules and regulations. And shall I tell you what Martin Luther said about this? I'm sure you're dying to know. You're going to find it anyway. He says this in his usual strident manner: if anywhere the day is made holy for the mere day's sake, if anyone sets up observance on a Jewish foundation, then I order you to work on it, to ride on it, to dance on it, to feast on it, to do anything that shall remove this encroachment on Christian liberty. Yeah, well said, Martin. Not always that I've ever agreed with Martin Luther. I do this morning. That's good stuff. He's setting us free from rules and regulations. There's a reason for keeping a rest day, but not the rules and religious ones that we talk about. And here's Paul. Paul writes this. He says we should respect. So we've made it danger this morning making fun of others who believe differently to us or to me. But seriously, we should respect the Sabbath practices of other people. Because Paul says in the Message, Romans 14:5, one person thinks that some days should be set aside as holy. Another thinks that each day is pretty much like any other. There are good reasons either way. So each person is free to follow the convictions of conscience. So on the one hand, we respect the principles of others. But on the other hand, no one should judge us for what we do. Because Paul writes in Colossians, don't let anyone condemn you for what you eat or drink, for not celebrating certain holy days or new moon ceremonies or Sabbaths. For these rules are only shadows of the reality yet to come. And Christ himself is that reality. So for me, it's fairly straightforward that Paul and Jesus were pushing us in the direction that we would probably most of us would be in anyway. So let's think about learning to rest. On the seventh day, God modelled the principle of resting one day a week. Guess if it's good enough for God, it's good enough for us, isn't it? Speaking about time, Albert Einstein said, there certainly seems to be less of it about than there used to be. He was a wise, intelligent man. There are many things he's written, I don't have the foggiest idea what he's talking about. But that works for me. And how about this? Have any of these words been fallen from your lips this week? I'm too busy. Perhaps a mistake was made this morning with the songs because we're too busy. There never seems to be enough time. It's been all go this week. Don't know where the time goes by. This week simply flown by. I haven't had a moment to spare. Yeah? Come on, be honest. Anybody said that this week? Yeah. Life is like that, isn't it? And the truth is this. If a farmer farms his land, his fields, the same field, year after year after year, he's not going to produce a good harvest. At some time, he's got to let that field lie fallow. Leave it. Rest it. Don't use it for a period of time. I'm told that violin, you know, I know a lot about violins, as you can imagine. The violin strings, if they're kept at concert pitch, tense, ready for playing all the time, they will snap. They need to be released. The pressure needs to be taken off of them. And the constant pressure of work without proper rest and recreation will eventually lead you and I to stress, to illness, and to break down. I want to read you a story, a very brief one, from a J. John book called Ten, about the Ten Commandments. A business executive talking into a cellular phone is walking along a beautiful, sun-drenched beach. Over his phone conversation, all he can hear is the sound of the waves and the gulls crying. Oh, I'm there already, are you? Oh, yes, nice. Give me an ice cream and I'm sorted. Oh, not on a Sunday, though. Yeah. Ahead of him, a man in simple clothes. Oh, yes, I've got a picture of this. There you go, a sleeping fisherman. Ahead of him, a man in simple clothes is dozing in the shade of a fishing boat that's pulled up onto the beach. As he passes, the fisherman wakes up, and the executive, now waiting for a call to be returned, decides to make conversation. The weather is great. There are plenty of fish. Why are you lying around instead of going out and catching more? The fisherman replied gently, because I caught enough this morning. And just imagine, the executive says, if you went out three or four times a day and bought three or four times as many fish back home, you know what could happen? The fisherman's puzzled. He doesn't know what could happen. Why, said the executive, becoming enthusiastic, you could buy yourself a motorboat. Then perhaps after two or three years, a second one. Perhaps after three or four years, a cutter or two. And just think, one day you might be able to build a freezing plant. You might eventually even get your own helicopter for tracing shoals of fish and guiding your fleet of cutters. You could even acquire your own trucks to ship your fish to the capital. And yes, said the fisherman. And then the executive concludes triumphantly, you could be calmly sitting on the beach side, dozing in the sun and looking at the beautiful ocean. The fisherman said, what do you think I'm doing? Some principles to finish with. I very rudely said to Lizzie Cronin, if you know her, don't bother to listen to this. It's a waste of time. She works 24/7, 7 days a week. I don't believe she sleeps, but she must do, really. But I've realised I'm not so good at doing this as well. Start with a choice. If you want to set a day aside to rest, for refreshment, recovery, you will not do it unless you decide to do it. It won't just happen. It won't suddenly drift in one day into your diary, into your lifestyle, into your planning. You have to make a choice. See, we're designed to be human beings, not human doings. And I'm a human doing very often. Are you? Doing. Not have a chance to being. You know, the only people who can't take a day off are slaves. And we're not slaves. We're sons and daughters of the living God. If you're a Christian this morning, you're not a slave. You're a son, you're a daughter. You need to take some time off. A choice we have to make. We have to guard it. Let other people know what we're doing. We can't expect people to know automatically that, you know, this particular day I'm taking a break. I'm not available. I'm not available to the phone or to the whatever. And if people might still contact you, avoid things like email and text and phones and stuff. How many people who know when Simon Cooper and our vicar's day off is? If you know when it is, which day is it? How did you know that? He told you. He told you. So you don't, well, unless it's an emergency, you don't knock his door on a Monday. I think he goes for coffee with his wife and bookshops and things like that. We'll come back to what he does on his day off because I'm going to mention that in a moment. So we need to guard it. We need to choose it, but we need to guard it. And we need to rest, recharge, and refresh. Do you know, I've read in a book, sleep in if you can. Now, if you're parents of young children, that's probably an impossibility. But my wife would sleep in every morning ever if it was humanly possible. She wakes at 11. She's been in school since 8, but she wakes at 11. She's not cross with me. She's nodding. First thing they give her at school is a big cup of tea. Go out for a walk or a drive. Go watch a film, read a book, do some gardening, join the gym. Fiona was telling us about her secret life in the gym this morning at 9 o'clock. Join the gym. Talk to Fiona. She'll tell you what it's like to join a gym and get some exercise. You know, physically leaving the house will help you avoid any work situations. It's good to plan ahead and do things. So rest, recharge, refresh, and rest in freedom. Keeping the Jewish Sabbath was hard work. By the time the Pharisees and the religious leaders had finished with it, I'm told, there were 1,531 different rules and regulations about the Sabbath. How far you could walk, what you could do, what you couldn't do, what happened if an animal fell down a hole, things like that. Rule after rule, regulation after regulation. It's how you and I rest is up to us. Back to the vicar. He does coins and Vikings on his day off. That's exciting for Simon. Well, no, seriously, it is. If you hear him talk about it, he has a passion. He has a passion for these things. So if you're doing something like that's different from your normal 5-6 days a week, it's refreshing, it's renewing, it's recovering. So do it. Be free to rest in the way that is good for you. If possible, include others, especially family. The family meal has got lost. It's around the television. It's distracted. It's phone calls. It's just set aside. Go out for a meal or something. Go to the theatre. Go to the cinema. Have a picnic in the park. Family meals. Just include others in what you do, if possible. And finally, enjoy God. Whatever you do, make sure there's time for God. If your Sabbath day happens to be the Sunday when you're not in church like you are now, then you need to make time for God in what you're doing. Discover solitude, says he who hasn't. Discover meditation, says he who is learning. Discover reflection, says he who is learning. Discover worship, Bible study. Put a worship tape on. Lie on the bed. Listen to music. Chill out with God. Hear from God. God wants to speak to us. God's a God who speaks. And the things he wants to say to us. Sometimes he wants to say to us so that we can bring it to church. Because it's a word from him for a wider group of people. Sometimes it's just for us. Give time on that day to enjoy God. Well, that's it really. I'm tired now. I'm going to have a rest. Just to say this. When I prepared this sermon, I became convicted that I'm not practicing what I'm preaching. Now, I didn't say to Simon, I won't do it. You do it, because I knew he was off anyway today. But that made me apologise in my mind to Lizzie. Because Lizzie, you know, so you need to ignore what I've just said completely. Ignore it completely. Don't take a scrap of notice of what I've just said, unless I do something about it in my life. So you've got my permission in the coming weeks to say, Peter, I remember that talk you gave the other Sunday. Are you doing it? Is it happening? Please ask me. And if I say yes, then you can take notice of what I said.